morning, everybody. Matt Pavala with you, 720 WGN. Jess Rains is producing tonight behind the glass. Roger Badish working hard, extra hard tonight up in the newsroom, Roger.
Woo.
I was just telling Jess, like, we got the school closing center going almost.
Almost.
It's a snow day.
Yeah. It's rough out there.
It is rough out there. All right. So I need to go over a few things with you that I don't understand.
Okay.
I drive 90 from the far west suburbs all the way downtown all the time.
Right.
Where are you talking about where this canal? What? Where is this at?
Oh, no, no. That's on 9094.
Okay.
That's heading, Dan Ryan.
So this is all the way down on the Dan Ryan?
Yeah.
That these issues are going on.
But it's coming from, the slowdown starts at the Eisenhower.
Yeah. And what was it, a wrong way driver or what's going on down there?
Oh, there's police activity. Yeah. And they don't have the details, but usually when they say police activity, it's a shooting.
Right.
But this one extends more. Usually it's in one spot, and there's just a slow of going into it. This extends further down. In fact, there's two spots on the Rhine. There's that spot, and then there's another one that totally unexplained, according to the map we have, that it's just a slowdown from about Archer down to about Garfield, where everything's like single digits on your travel times going south, and then it just opens up. There's no explanation for it. But then the one you're talking about, which is not inbound, it's outbound on the Eisenhower, that one is at Harlem, right before Harlem, so it's backing up from about Austin.
And that was a wrong-way driver?
No, that was another police activity, and it's only blocking two right lanes, so traffic's still kind of getting through there, but it's slowing up. There was a, I think what you're referring to, there was earlier in the evening, there were two cars that were speeding through the entire area. They started on the western, southwest suburbs, and they ended up in the north, east area of the Chicago area. One was a stolen car, and the other one was not identified. And the last I heard, and this was a couple hours ago, that police kind of had given up on chasing them. So they kind of disappeared.
You know, I know this is going to sound crazy.
Yeah.
Because crime never takes a holiday.
Yes.
You can quote me on that, Roger.
Yeah, okay.
But I would say that I know hot summer nights, generally, especially these overnights when we're together, we'll hear about all these shootings, everything. There's always craziness going on.
Mm-hmm.
The one benefit of a bunch of insane rain is usually even the criminals are like, man,
right.
I'm not going out tonight.
No.
It kind of sucks out there.
It hasn't stopped them.
But it hasn't seemed
not
to stop
this weekend.
The problems tonight, which isn't, the police got other things they'd like to do, like help people out. And we're not giving
And then,
them
of course, you got all the festivals. And now downtown, they're starting to block off streets to get things ready for Lollapalooza.
That's not this weekend.
No.
It's next week. They're already starting to prepare for it, though.
But they're
Well, they got the mud all ready to go. They got the wet grass mud ready to go.
Yeah.
They just need 100,000 people to fill the...
Right, spread it around.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right now, Balboa Drive between Columbus and Lake is closed until October 10th. Additional closures will be gradually implemented through Monday, July 31st. Lollapalooza taking place from August 3rd through Sunday the 6th.
Mm. So the flooding that's going on.
Yeah.
Let's talk about this for a little bit.
So that's up north.
I live way out in West Dundee.
Okay.
Right off the Fox River.
Mm-hmm.
I don't live right off the Fox River, but it's right there in our town.
You got your houseboat out there?
I tell you what, you get your houseboat over there, you can drive it down a street right now because it's just about even with some ridges and stuff.
Wow.
And did I hear you talking about that earlier tonight?
There's flooding. Excuse me. We've had stories in the news about it.
I had heard that, the river, I think, crests or its flood level is about 9.5 feet.
Yeah, and we're there.
And now they're saying that later this week could get up to 13.5
yeah.
feet. That's not good.
No.
That's just simple math right there.
No.
That's not good.
No. It'd be good for realtors. They could probably go around saying, I have some waterfront property for you.
They could.
You know.
There's a lot of people with basements. We ain't laughing at that joke.
Yeah, sorry about that.
Yeah, it's bad. It's bad out there.
Yeah.
And we're in Little League season where we're hosting tournaments and stuff, and the fields
are
flooded.
Can you even see it? The field?
We actually have a field that's always, so the 8 years or whatever I've been volunteering in the league, we have this one field with lights. So when we host tournaments and stuff like that, we got to generally use that field. And the infield, when it rains, you get the tractor out, you get a lot of bags of this dry sand, kitty litter type stuff to help it out if you need it. Usually we're fine. Sometimes it's too bad. You say, no, it's got to wait till tomorrow because it's just going to be too sloshy. But usually, rain like this, we could have turned it around tonight. the right center field area was so flooded. Last night, myself and another guy spent about 2 hours with like one of those 5 gallon buckets,
mm-hmm.
just dragging it along the grass, and it would fill halfway up. And then we'd go throw it to another part. We spent 2 hours trying to empty out the outfield last night.
And you probably didn't make a dent.
We did make a dent. Right. We got it to the point where, although when they actually played the game, if kids ran through that area, it was going to splash. I mean, it was still that bad.
Geez.
And then we had the field all ready to play today mm-hmm. for tonight. And 3:30 or so in the afternoon, the skies open up. Go out there at 5, big flood out in the outfield again.
Yep.
So we're hosting what's the 12U sectional term. These are the kids that would go on to play in the Little League state championship. And if they win that, would go on to a regional and then possibly on to Williamsport. It's that mm-hmm. age level. And the two teams playing tonight were from Moline and Ottawa. So they're driving, Moline's driving, you know, two and a half hours in.
Right.
It's not short.
No.
So unfortunately, we're calling them at 5, you know, an hour and a half before game time saying, yeah, it's not going to work out.
Oh, no.
So the nice folks at Elgin National Little League ran out, fixed up their field. We went out and helped out tonight, and they got the game in. So
oh, really?
We're very thankful for that. Yeah, because
that's
it was
great.
It was a mess.
Were you saying in Elgin?
In Elgin, yes.
Well, that's where the power lines are.
Well, and here's the crazy thing. So me and a couple other dads drive down to Elgin to go help out. Because mm-hmm. we were supposed to host this, and our field flooded. They got lights, and we could do it there, so we went to help out. And I will post this. If you like our show on Facebook, go to Facebook and click on the Matt Bubala Show and give it a like. I'm going to post a photo. So we're driving through the neighborhood. Elgin National's parks are right by a neighborhood off of Hiawatha near Route 25.
Mm-hmm.
We're driving down that street, and there's police activity. And a lot when we had bad storms by us, a lot of thunder and lightning,
mm-hmm.
never had high winds.
Oh, you didn't have the
we
winds.
Didn't have okay. the really high winds, but Elgin, not, you know, 10, 15 minutes south of me, must have had it insane.
Yeah.
And if anybody listening is from Elgin tonight, 312-981-7200. So we're driving down a street with what looks like an 80-year-old tree just turned on its side, and the sidewalk that was next to it just flipped over.
Yeah.
And then trees on houses. Looks like a house fire that was related to either lightning or a tree falling out. I couldn't believe how much it looked like a tornado had come through there. It was
We've
amazing.
Got, Wing Street at North McLean Boulevard.
Yeah.
Power cables are down on the roadway. Also, Preston Avenue at Congdon Avenue. Power lines on the roadway of Preston and Cooper. Also, flooding has closed down Duncan Avenue between Trout Park Boulevard and Jane Addams Tollway. So there's flooding up in that area. So it's a mess all over the place. And you know what? What's worse is it was a mess already.
Right.
And nobody even got to take a breath. And it's a mess even more so, double over now. So, and these rains, I don't know if you looked at the radar, but there is a string of heavy showers. All the way going into Iowa. Waterloo, Iowa is getting an edge of it right now. And those are heading here. So we're going to get a break here from the action soon, even though it's the northern part of the state is still under showers.
Mm-hmm.
Indiana is getting socked. Southwest Michigan is socked. This is all heading into Ohio now. And Detroit area is getting ready to get rain. But majority of our area will get a break soon, and then more is going to pour in.
Mm. So when is more pouring into our area? Morning?
Well, not having the exact details, the Tom Skilling details of the speed of the storm and the winds around it, but just from experience looking at the map, I'd say that the majority of our area, not including the northern part, and I'm talking northern part from about Evanston up north, will not see a break. But many of our western suburbs, Naperville is clear right now, some scattered showers there. Southern parts will be clear pretty soon. The main part of the city will be cleared soon. And then we're going to get some more. I would say around 4:30-ish, we will see these storms again push into those areas that got a break.
It's drizzling right now on Michigan Avenue. Yeah. It has pretty much let up. But when I was driving in tonight, it rained all the way down here. And I saw a pretty good lightning storm. And we had some great lightning out in the far western burbs. Julie in Crystal Lake texts, no power in large area of Crystal Lake since 8 p.m. Any updates would be helpful.
We're looking at
20,000 to 25,000 ComEd people without service, right?
And we're looking at, where did she say?
Crystal Lake.
Which is north of me, up north. Yeah. Well, I'm looking. There we go. It finally popped in. Lake in the Hills. Algonquin.
That's right in that
Woodstock area.
Lake in the Hills is right there. By
all right. So I've got they're patchy outlets. There's customers like ComEd's outage map. If anyone, if you have access to the internet on your phone in that area or anywhere where lights may be out. If you think you still have service on your phone and have the internet, you can go to the outagemap.comed.com, and you will see little triangles with numbers, and they will tell you how many customers are affected. And like, there's 15 customers in one spot, 134 customers in another spot. Less than 5 in another area, 88
in another.
So
it's kind of spread out all over the place.
It's spread out all over.
And have they given any estimates of when they expect to get everything back up and running?
No. I could zoom in, and it splits it up even more. Here's Crystal Lake on East Terracotta Avenue, 124 customers, additional crews required, severe weather, estimated restoration 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. This is on, I can't see the street here, West Woodstock Street, less than 7 o'clock in the morning. North of that, there's less than 5 people affected, 11:30 in the morning.
Okay, so sometime mid-morning, hopefully everybody, if we don't get any worse storms that keep the crews away
from
the
work. Right, exactly.
The good news is, as I was driving down, the temperature dropped dramatically because it was a muggy day out today.
Yeah, and it's still muggy out there.
But it was, I want to say it was like 71-ish when I left West Dundee, which felt nice. So Julie out in Crystal Lake, hopefully you can at least open up the windows a little bit tonight if it's not raining too hard, and little air in the house to get you through it until the power gets back on. I'm glad your old transistor radio is still working, or if you're listening to us on your phone, however you are, stay with us throughout the night, and Roger will keep updating that as we get into and out of the news to let you know what's going on. We're going to chat with our old friend Jason Stephenson. I don't know if you remember Jason. He is a member, or he works with the Kepler Institute. He used to work out here at Fermilab, and he looks for planets that can sustain life outside of our area, right? Millions and millions and billions of light years away. And there's been a lot of weird stuff, the weird space stuff in the news lately. China, we read from this last week, Roger. China.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
What did they do? They did that Star Trek-y thing. What's that called?
The Star Trek-y thing?
You know, they beamed up something.
Yeah,
to space.
A laser.
No. Well, there's that. There was something in the news about the first actual laser weapon this week. But this wasn't that. This was, what's it called? They teleported stuff. They teleported photons,
right,
remember?
Proton.
Photons.
Yeah.
They split photons and teleported one to space. And I don't understand that craziness. Maybe Jason can explain it in language we understand. And we'll talk about the general search for life. New life in Washington, the Scaramucci guy. we'll play some audio from him. What an entrance he made onto the landscape.
That's a good-looking guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I would not buy a car from him. That's what I think of.
Especially when he took a car from that guy.
You're going to regret it.
Where there was a video, and I wasn't listening to it, but I saw him. He reached his hand up and smoothed that hair back. All the way back from the top. He got a good head of hair. And it looks like it's finely moistened. And he just smoothed that hair right back and then pointed out right at the media and smiled that used car salesman smile.
He even did the special effect just happen at his teeth? Did it like ding and like?
Well, it was a side shot, so I wasn't sure.
So
but
maybe it didn't. But you hit that light just right. That's just gonna go ding as he smiles at you, and you're just gonna be overwhelmed with joy. Yeah. So we'll chat about him a little bit and Sean Spicer and just the very interesting happenings out in D.C. on Friday. And we'll have a lot of fun, too, with you all night long. 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls, play some spots, get to the news, and then chat with you next. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. We're live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on the Wet Magnificent Mile. Wet Magnificent Mile. 312-981-7200. If you got something to say about the weather that you're facing, or the power outages you're facing, or the flooding you're facing, or the river you're worried about, please give us a call. 331 texted in. Somebody, that, I guess their phone doesn't work to chat, but it works to text. They're out chasing storms right now, which is pretty darn cool. Probably not recommended, but I don't think these storms are that severe. But man, there are sights to see. Just in Elgin, as I was saying, I saw a tree uprooted. I saw a tree on a house. I saw what looked like a fire. We saw a couple different incidences of power lines down. I saw some video posted earlier tonight that I think was from Crystal Lake of a tree that was uprooted. And this was while the storm was going on. They didn't have the actual uprooting on video, but they started shooting, I imagine, after they saw the tree on the ground. And the winds, the gusts were amazing. There must have been 60-mile-an-hour or more winds out in some areas during those storms tonight. And as Roger said, we got a little bit more to come still before we get through it. So 312-981-7200. Later in the show, Jason Steffen from the Kepler Institute will be on with us. I want to talk about, and Jess was trying to find, see if she could track down the reporter from the Milwaukee Sentinel Journal or Journal Sentinel, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who wrote this story about American tourists in Mexico. My mom always gets worried when we go to Mexico because, you know, there's shootings and there's drug stuff. And I'm always like, that doesn't happen where we go. Don't worry about it. We're going to all-inclusive resorts. It's fine. You know, they want the American dollars to come down. Don't worry about it. And then I see the story last night on Twitter, or, you know, from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about all these Americans who've been blacking out at these resorts. And there was a story about somebody in Wisconsin who died just recently, drowned in a pool. And they found all these other stories of people who blacked out. And it's not, at least according to the people, no, we didn't drink that much. We had a couple of drinks. Next thing I know, I wake up and I'm in my room and personnel around me. Allegations that they won't call the police when something happens. Allegations that if you want to go to the doctor, you kind of take a cab and go yourself. And then they're demanding like $1,300 from you at the hospital. And it's kind of a scary thing because when you are an American traveling abroad, you are, you know, even though it's just Mexico, you feel safe there because it's just Mexico, but you are in a foreign land and you don't have maybe the same rights you have at home and you don't know the language and things like that. It is a little worrisome, but you always feel safe at these all-inclusive resorts. You land, you get on the bus, you go there. That's all you need. Maybe you go into town, maybe you don't. It's up to you. But the drinks flow and the good times flow. And now there's these stories that it's not just one or two people. They have like six or seven or eight people from Wisconsin just in these stories. And I wonder if there's a lot more people out there with stories about their trips to Mexico or other places, all-inclusive resorts, and worries about what is in the alcohol, how strong are the drinks, things like that. 312-981-7200 is the number. And we're also going to talk later in the show about our friend Sean Spicer. Actually, we could probably talk about Sean Spicer right now. So Sean Spicer resigned Friday morning. It was, I think it was surprising news because there was always, you know, Spicer might get forced out. Something might happen to Spicy. But I thought it was kind of sudden today. I didn't, you know, there weren't a lot of reports that Spicer might be out at the end of the week. But President Trump hired New York financier Anthony Scaramucci. Am I saying that right, Raj? Anthony Scaramucci?
Scaramucci. Yeah.
The Mooch.
Who apparently, not only many years ago, criticized Trump, but recently, before the presidency, before they were running, apparently.
During the campaign
and a little before, I think, but it started donating a lot of money to him.
He started donating a lot of money to Trump?
Yeah.
Well, he has previously donated to President Obama and to Hillary Clinton.
And if I read this right, and if the source is correct, was a classmate of President Obama's at law school.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting. You're right. There is a story I saw last night, and I don't know, Jess, I don't know if I sent you to the link to this, but if you would look up, there is a Daily Beast article, I think, about Scaramucci and his deleted tweets. Because it's so interesting, Roger. So he wrote tweets, or he sent out some tweets critical of Trump before he became president.
Right.
And wanted him to drop out or different things like that. Nothing like terribly nasty, nasty, mm-hmm. but things that, you know, Trump wouldn't appreciate.
Right.
He didn't delete them till after he got this job.
Whoa.
And somebody just happened to find them and then they were gone. But, you know, he screenshot them, whatever, he saved them. But it's so funny that thinking there had to be some lead up to him getting this job,
right.
some interviews, some discussions. And you would think if you're thinking, yeah, I might like that job. That's right. I tweeted some bad things about him. He probably isn't going to like them. Maybe I should go back and delete those now.
Mm-hmm.
It's just surprising that you wouldn't. You're a communications guy. You really want to be on top of stuff like that, right? So the fact that he had tweets out there critical of President Trump were kind of surprising. And that he waited so long to delete them is kind of surprising. But he did. He's got the job, whatever. And you can't hold against him that he donated to President Obama and Hillary because, I mean, President Trump donated a lot of money to Hillary and the Clintons over the years back
True.
In the day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he used to hang out with them, consider them friends. So he probably can't hold that against him. But there were interviews on Fox News they were digging up today, too. Audio of Scaramucci criticizing Trump, I think, back during the election. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll have a little bit of that later on. Jess, do you have any Sean Spicer, or do you only have Mr. Scaramucci? Hit the mic button. I can't hear you, honey.
Do you need Spicer commenting today?
No. Well, I didn't know. Jess, I'm sorry, Jess, I can't hear you. You're not turning something on there. There we go. Scaramucci. Okay, let's play. So Anthony Scaramucci, I don't know, Raj, how long the press conference was. I only saw on Twitter 27 seconds. Somebody tweeted here in 27 seconds. Here's exactly why Anthony Scaramucci has this job. Here's him talking about the president he will work under.
Here's what I tell you about the president. He's the most competitive person I've ever met. Okay, I've seen this guy throw a dead spiral through a tire. I've seen him at Madison Square Garden with a top coat on. He's standing in the key and he's hitting foul shots and swishing them, okay? He sinks 3-foot putts. I don't see this guy as a guy that's ever under siege. This is a very, very competitive person. Obviously, there's a lot of incoming that comes into the White House, but the president's a winner, okay? And what we're going to do is we're going to do a lot of winning.
Winning, winning, winning.
Well, I mean, that's what Trump wants to hear, right? I mean, that's the type of attitude he loves.
Right.
For sure.
And but I think all of the sports-related comments that he made, I don't think he expected anyone to take him seriously. I think what
yes,
he was
he
trying
did.
To convey was that President Trump is a winning person. He knows how to score and score big and move the game along. I think they were all sports related descriptions of the kind of presidency that he has just stepped into.
Well, I think that he did want everybody to take that seriously. And if anybody questioned it, he would defend it to the death. See, absolutely. Yes, I've seen him do that. Do you think?
No.
Do you think? I find it hard to believe that he ever saw Donald Trump throw a tight spiral through a tire.
Yeah. Well,
when the hell was Trump doing that? Now, maybe he has. I could see him in Madison Square Garden getting to walk around, take some shots before a game. I don't see him swishing a bunch from the key. Raj, I barely ever play golf anymore. He nails 3-foot
putts. Well, those are fairly close.
I was going to say decent golfers, and we know he does play a decent amount of
golf.
He generally should be able to hit the 3-foot putt, right?
Yeah, he
misplayed that one. Should have said he nails 5-foot putts all the time.
Well, even 5 foot's not too bad.
Not that bad?
No.
What should he say?
No, 30-foot putts.
Well, 30-footer, come on. He'd be on the tour if he was nailing 30-foot putts.
Well,
right?
Yeah.
But at least a 10-foot putt. But he nails 10-foot putts.
That would fit in with the swishing the baskets, the free throws, and firing a spiral through a tire.
Well, I don't know. See,
I can't throw a spiral through a tire.
Well,
I can't even see the darn tire. Blind as a bat.
But if you're standing in the key, you could swish a basketball a
I
few
know,
times.
I could
that,
not.
That's a 10-foot putt.
No,
that's not a 30-foot putt.
And he's 70 years old. So he's older, and this guy has seen him do all this.
Maybe he saw it back in the day.
Well.
But what's funny is he's so competitive. It's not like, I don't know, the two didn't correlate that well to me. To say
but see, I saw
all,
the
this sounds like he's got athletic prowess.
Yeah.
That's not competitive. Was he playing a game of horse with Jordan?
No.
You know, he's just out here doing feats of... You know, it sounds like he's athletic and he's still full of testosterone and stuff, but to me that doesn't exactly equate to winning. You know what I mean? It's not like he's...
I understand how you're seeing it, but I see it like the way I explained it. That this guy knows how to score. He knows how to win. He knows how to make things happen. He's vibrant. He knows
yeah,
what's going
on. Vibrant and young.
On.
I think he's trying to portray all that, you know, that he's...
You know. So, I don't know. I took it as the guy who's coming in and say, look, we don't care what you guys think. This is the kind of guy I work for, and let's go. You know, boom,
that's
boom,
for
boom.
Sure. He doesn't care what you think. Jess, when you get a chance, I know you're answering a call right now, get the audio of Sean Spicer from Fox. He did an interview with Fox today. Because when Sean Spicer resigned, I thought, oh, this is very interesting.
Yeah.
What is he going to say now? Is he going to...
Well, he's still working technically through August for the president.
He is.
Yeah, according to what I read earlier today, that he's still on the books through August, or maybe at least through the beginning of August. And so he still is technically working for, even though he resigned.
Yeah, but he's still under contract until August.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's get back to that in a second. Brad has called in from Arlington Heights. Brad, good morning. You're on 720 WGN. How are you?
Oh, I can't believe I'm still awake. I work in a school, and I've spent the last couple of weeks watching MSNBC, CNN, like 8, 9, 10 hours a day.
You can't wait for school to start. Get away from all this, huh?
Addicted to the greatest reality show ever, which I'm afraid is going to end up in just God knows what. You know, I'm really scared for the future of this country. And this guy, Scaramucci, and Trump are peas in a pod. But to I don't know who, the rube of the lowest order, they're so transparent in their con man persona. I mean, and he was such a sycophant. It reminded me of the round table where they had the cabinet meeting where each one of the cabinet members were outdoing each other, kissing his you-know-what. I mean, it was nauseating.
He is, it was just so interesting that it's like a carnival guy. It's like P.T. Barnum type guy that just came up.
I have a friend who said Trump is a carnival barker.
Yeah. Well, this guy is, that's for sure.
You know Rick Wilson, you know who he is?
No.
He was McCain's campaign chairman or campaign manager.
Okay.
Took over in the middle of the campaign, I think, in 2008. And he has since come to the realization of just how bereft of any values the Republican Party is. Sorry, all my Republican compatriots are. And his comment about Scaramucci today was saying, yeah, you know, I bet if he pulled his shirt up, you'd see a MAGA tramp stamp on his back.
He totally would be at the beach. In fact, he'll probably
exactly.
Maybe this weekend.
And one of the women on there said that Scaramucci is a combination of Tony Robbins and Corey Lewandowski.
Scaramucci is the guy you're going to see either hosting or starring on Cheaters at some point.
You know what, though? I don't think so, because he's a billionaire.
Well, that's the other crazy thing is, why are these billionaires taking these jobs? These jobs that pay $120,000 just because they want to be in front of the camera, want to work at the White House?
Well, yeah, ego. It's all ego. These people are narcissistic to a malignant degree. And I watched as much as I could take of the press conference, and I had the big screen, you know, so I could see it pretty close up. He has dead eyes. He has the eyes of Sonny the Bull. Remember him?
Sonny the Bull?
Bravano, yeah. He was...
one of the mobster guys?
Yeah, he was hitman for... I can't remember one of the big mobsters in New York.
Sure.
God, I can't believe I can't think of the guy's name. But it just...
Talking about John Gotti or somebody like that?
He was Gotti's hitman. He was the big hitman for Gotti. Yeah, Sonny the Bull Gravano. You don't remember him?
I remember the name, but I don't remember the guy.
I'm really worried about what's going to happen to the country. They're doing everything that they can to dismantle the government. Here's a guest that you might try to get maybe during the day. She's a Duke University historian. She wrote a book called Democracy in Chains, and it takes dark money. You know that book by Jane Meyer, who
Sure.
wrote about the brothers.
Sure.
Well, she wrote a book that expands upon that, and it centers around this guy named James Buchanan, who was a Nobel Prize-winning economist, and he worked some with Friedman and the Chicago Boys, but his whole philosophy centered around an advanced form of libertarianism that basically said anything is okay, especially lying, in order to dismantle the administrative state so that we have complete laissez-faire economics that run the country. Mm-hmm. And the things that she cites in the book are happening right now. There's no more EPA, basically. They're gutting the Department of State. They're rolling back all the regulations. They came up with this phony, election commission that's headed by this Kobach guy that all he cares about basically is suppressing voter rights. Did you know in Kansas that the law that he ran through there has resulted in 1/7 of the voters not being able to register because they made it so hard to provide identity? You have to provide a passport or a birth certificate to get a voter's registration there.
Brad, I got to get the next call on. Thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate it, buddy.
Sure.
All right. Have a great morning. We got Patrick in Rolling Meadows who's got a comment. Hey, Patrick, how are you?
Hey, super. I don't know how Roger doesn't see what's going on here. This is totally like a TV show. He's going off. I mean, everything Trump does is like immediate. Like, you know, I mean, he's running his presidency like he's like his TV show, The
Apprentice.
What was it?
Well,
The Apprentice.
I think that is fair, and I don't think that's a really harsh criticism. I think
it's not.
Trump came from a more media background and business background, and he's trying to run things in his comfort zone and have as much control over things as he can. And let's face it, every administration, whoever it is, wants to spin the message in a positive way for them. Some get more crazy about it than others. Some have different styles, whatever, whatever. But he is, listen, President Trump has been besieged since he's been in office by negative news, right? Whether you think the media is out to get him or not, or it's all of his own doing.
I don't get that. He's our president. I mean, I don't get why everybody, it's like, you know, at a certain point, cut your losses. You start sticking up for the guy. Even if he is the goofiest guy in the world, he is our president. Everybody in the press is blabbing out to everybody else in the world, this guy's a moron. Really?
Patrick.
Is that what you want? Not you guys.
No, but listen, hey, I'm critical of him too. I'm very critical of him, but I'm going to defend the media here and say he brings it all on himself. It's not the media's responsibility to protect him for the rest of the world. He is what he is.
It's not. It's kind of the media. It's weird because the media picks on certain things, and when they pick on him, I get it. It's an easy target, but the rest of the world is watching, and they're like, "Wait a minute! It sounds like the rest of this country does." Even though this guy got elected, the rest of the country wants to rebel against him, and you know, at a certain point, somebody might try to take advantage of that and say, "Hey, you want to be on our side, you know, give us some secrets."
Well,
and, you know, I don't know. It's just me. I don't know.
I hear you. I think there's concern that side, that Trump was already in bed a little bit with another country or people in his. And we don't know what's there. And maybe that's all smoke and no fire. We don't know. But
come on. That guy is he's got to be a billionaire, right?
Trump?
He's in the club.
Yeah. Trump is a billionaire, I think, depending on what decade you look at. I think it's been real up and down for him because
exactly,
with anybody with that kind of money who invests, you lose, you win, you lose, you win. So right now I'd say, yeah, he's got to be a billionaire. He's you know.
And so he's in that billionaire club. So like you said, why is this guy taking Sean Spicer's place and for, like you said, $120,000?
Oh, you're talking about
it's
Scaramucci.
Not ego. Yeah, it's not ego. It's, hey, buddy, I need somebody else to take care of this because this guy's messing it up. And Yeah, Taramucci, like you said, hey, ba-ba-ba, I'll take care of you, hey, I got this for you, buddy,
All right, Patrick.
It's not an ego thing.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know if it's not an ego thing, because it's not a money thing, so I don't know what he's doing it for him for, but we'll find out more to come in the weeks. I'm sorry, we're running late. We got to get to the news next. Matt Bubalo with you, 720 WGN.
Ground control to Major Tom.
If you heard that weather report, you might think we need a new planet to live on.
Take your protein
a dry planet.
Pills and put your helmet on.
Of course, the other months of the year we're complaining about enough ground rain.
Yeah, right. That'd be too dry. Then you have, sandstorms.
Six.
Commencing countdown engines on.
Three.
Two.
So let's take some time to get away from D.C. and everything else crazy in our world. And let's talk about other worlds. And exoplanets, as they're called. Our friend Jason Steffen, who's now at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, works with the Kepler Institute. He used to work at Fermilab out here, but he's kind enough to still come on the phone with us once in a while. Hey, Jason, how are you this morning?
We're doing well. How are you?
Doing good, man. Haven't talked to you in a while. How's life in Nevada?
It's a little toasty.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Doing well.
What's the high temperature been recently?
We had a cold spell. It was only around 105 the last couple of days. But
did you put a shawl on during that time?
Yeah, I had to wear longer sleeves. But usually it's we had a couple of weeks where it was basically stayed at 115 for the whole time.
115. Now, we always hear, well, it's a dry heat. Are you like, yeah, you know what? For 115, this isn't as bad as I would think? Or is it like, oh, my God, this is pure misery?
115 does present some challenges. It rained a couple days ago, and so then it gets humid, and then you might as well be, in New York or someplace miserable. But if it's just over 100, it's not so bad.
Yeah.
Like between 100 and up to about 105, but then the screws get tightened, and it starts to get kind of uncomfortable.
I would imagine. All right, so let's chat with you. You're a good diversion from the rest of our world sometimes, Jason, and the work that you're doing to find exoplanets. And one of the most recent stories I'm reading about Kepler, because Kepler is winding down, right?
Yeah, so the final data release paper, I just got notification that it's ready to be submitted, and that will be kind of – that's basically the mission closeout. The spacecraft itself is still functioning. It's been repurposed into the K2 mission. Because the way missions work with NASA is a mission is a combination of a spacecraft and a science program. And so the spacecraft, it's kind of limping along. And so they pointed it in a part of the sky that allows them, it's easier for them to steer it.
Okay.
And so it's still operating in a different kind of pointing in a different direction. And they've repurposed the science agenda somewhat.
To better tailor
it's a K2 mission, but it's the same spacecraft.
So they're adding it. So the new mission is tailored to how to best use the craft as it's maybe getting older and not as agile anymore, whatever they have to. You said pointed in an area of the sky where they can steer it a little better. So now they're figuring out, okay, what's the best science we can find out of what we can still use this for?
Yeah, exactly.
Basically. And did the ship itself make it as long as it was supposed to? A lot of times the Mars rovers kept going on for years after they, had planned for, and so that was a great bonus. Has the Kepler lasted as long as they were hoping?
It lasted 4 months beyond the requirement.
So that's good. That's, like, wow, 10 years longer, but that's still pretty cool.
It wasn't, there's only so much to complain about, but it was, it had enough. So there's two different steering mechanisms. One of them is what are called reaction wheels, so the gyros. And those things are very smooth, and they allow you to point very precisely. And the other mechanism is gas thrusters, hydrazine thrusters. And so that's the thing that squirts gas to steer the spacecraft.
Okay.
So there was enough hydrazine to do course pointing for like a decade. The reaction wheels are the things that failed. There were four, so there were three plus a backup, and then two of them failed.
Yeah. So they can only sort of steer it now.
Yeah, so what they did is actually, it's actually kind of clever, the way they repurposed it, is they now look directly away from the sun, or almost directly away from the sun,
mm-hmm.
and they use the fact that when the spacecraft is pointed slightly in the wrong direction, that the light from the sun reflecting off the spacecraft pushes it back kind of into line. So... Mm-hmm. NASA engineers are—they're pretty smart people.
Well, they're pretty, very MacGyver-like. They have a history of trying to figure out, you know, what can we do in the situation, figuring out a workaround, don't they?
Yeah, they're like, yeah, hey, we got a Snickers bar and some duct tape. can we make this thing work?
We can get 10 more years out of this. How many more years are they hoping to get for the K2 mission then?
So the K2 mission undergoes a fairly—it's a standard process. It's called the senior review, where it gets revisited every 2 years to see. Basically, every 2 years, there's a proposal submitted to extend the mission. And they say, this is what we'll do in the extended mission. This is what we've done with the time that you've given us so far.
And this is why it's worthwhile. So, let's invest the funds and we can still get this much out of it. So they'll keep going
right.
as long as the science is producing something that makes it worthwhile to keep throwing some money at it, basically, right?
Right. And then eventually, you know, new missions, the budget just constraints say it's time to do a new mission and then it
goes away.
Yeah.
And the K2 mission, is it still taking pictures of exoplanets? Is it still searching for exoplanets?
Yeah, it's still primarily an exoplanet mission. But they also, so some of the things that they've done is to look for exoplanets in different parts of the galaxy, and in different, around different kinds of stars. So those are where it was looking before. It was looking primarily for exoplanets around stars that are a lot like the sun,
mm-hmm.
and they tended to be isolated stars. There is quite a bit of work that's being done now on looking for planets orbiting in clusters of stars. Typically when stars form, they'll form in groups. And in some cases, the groups are very dense. There'll be like, you know, 100,000 or so stars that are all right next to each other. And so,
and when you say right next to each other, Jason,
just down the street.
how right so next to each other are we
right
talking?
Next to each other, they're pretty close. I mean, it would be within. I guess I don't know the typical size. Okay, I can figure this out.
Within so like how many light years of each other are we thinking?
Like less than one.
Less than one stars within less than one light year from each other.
Yeah.
So that's insanely close in cosmic terms, right?
Yeah, by galactic standards, that's right next to each other. I mean, that's well within, like, the solar system is basically a light year across. So you'd have several stars within the solar system.
Wow. So if that was our solar system, if we had several stars within our solar system, would our planet still be habitable?
Ours would be. Now, when I say the solar system, I mean the broader solar system. So it's not just.
Just not just our nine planets.
This is like
okay.
going way out there.
But we'd have some really bright stuff in the sky at night if we had seven planets or seven stars within even our extended solar system, wouldn't we?
Yeah, and they would move in a way that would be not necessarily obvious to an individual person in their lifetime, but, you know, 1,000 years is a long time, and you'd be able to see the stars changing positions over that amount of time.
Hmm.
So the Greeks would have a totally different sky of the brightest stars in that situation.
Yeah. Would there ever be, so when you find these, so now you're looking at planets at clusters, but it is still possible for planets to be habitable even if stars are only a light year away from each other.
Yeah, because that doesn't, they wouldn't add a whole lot of light. You might run into issues where there are, when you have stars that are that close that it disrupts some of the more distant comets.
Mm-hmm.
And so it might be a bit more of a hazardous place to live in that you would have comets that are disrupted more regularly and therefore have the potential to have dinosaur killing impacts more frequently.
If we had, so if you found planets that were habitable within one light year of other stars, I mean, that's the real, because right now, if we found life somewhere else, in our universe, we wouldn't, I mean, maybe we could contact through radio waves, things like that. But travel is seemingly impossible, at least at the current state of technology, right? But if there was a, if you guys found a cluster of stars only light year apart and habitable planets by several of them, that would lead to a possibility of not only maybe there is other life out there, but if there's if there is intelligent life, they could actually be with having real contact with each other too, couldn't they?
Yeah, if it was, if life was really common and that most stars had a habitable planet around them, then you could easily imagine a scenario where you have habitable planets. Now, developing intelligent life, a lot of the issue is how long does intelligent life last on a planet? And in this case, when I say intelligent life, I mean life that's sufficiently intelligent to communicate with other planets. How long of a window do you have? Because if for example, it only, and I guess we'll find out, you know, if intelligent life that can communicate with other systems only lasts for about a century, then you have a one century window out of 5 billion year lifetime of the system, at least to this so far in our own solar system.
Well, I don't like where this is going, Jason. Is that really the thought, that there might be only a century of? So you're not saying, hey, we already beat that. We've been here for, you know, thousands of years. You're saying to the point where civilization gets technologically advanced enough that they could communicate with another system, they might only have 100 years. That would mean that we've only got about 50 years left, and then you guys are worried that we're kaput?
Oh, no, that's not a prediction, right?
Okay.
That's just, we don't know how long civilizations that afford those kinds of comforts to their citizens before the citizens become unruly and decide that it was better when we were chasing bunnies with sticks.
Are you really thinking that, or are you thinking that either global warming makes it, or some sort of climate change makes a planet unhabitable, or meteor strike or something, you know, dinosaur type impact? You're not thinking that generally after a couple thousand years, the inhabitants of a planet just can't stand each other anymore and they completely destroy it. I hope you're not saying that, right?
It is more of, can a civilization that gets that advanced, okay, you can't really prevent asteroid impacts, right? Those are going to be things that happen. You can, I guess, at our point, if we were to see far enough in advance, we could probably do something about an asteroid, and it would not likely involve sending oil drillers to the planet with a nuclear, or to the asteroid with a nuclear weapon to drill down. And
can we at least send Ben Affleck?
If he wants to go.
What if we all want him to go?
We have to put that to a vote, right?
We could figure that out another time. We've had time on that one. But you're saying that you do think that if we, how far away would we have to spot an asteroid that was going to affect Earth significantly enough that we wanted to do something about it? How many years heads up would we need current state of technology to figure it out? If they said, okay, there's a meteor coming in 3 weeks and it is going to wipe out the planet unless we do something about it, do you think the world would be able to come together and figure out a way to?
I would be dead. There's no
chance.
Yeah.
That would be the worst possible thing ever. We would so be better off not knowing, don't you think? If they announced to the world, hey, here's the thing. It's about 6 miles wide. It's going to hit at this place. It will completely destroy everything in the world. We're all going to die. But you got about 3.5 weeks till it happens. I think that's the worst possible thing we could ever hear, because I think the world probably wouldn't last the 3.5 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I guess in that regard is that at this point, most of the close encounters we have with asteroids, and when I say close encounters, I mean, these things are way the heck out there. They're not,
right?
Like, having an actual close encounter is, it's close in some relative term. It's not actually close compared to the size of the atmosphere, for example.
Mm-hmm.
We usually find them after they've already gone by. But there are... surveys that are planned. The one that's coming up, and it should be relatively soon. I haven't been keeping close track of it. It's called the Large Synoptic Survey Telescope, LSST.
Mm-hmm.
And this telescope it's going to get like a bazillion bytes of data. It's like a petabyte of data a night. It's going to basically image the whole sky every 3 days. And it can see dim enough to find the asteroids that right now are the spookiest ones. Because the biggest ones we know about already. They're bright enough that we have already seen them. And so we're not too worried about the big ones because we know where they are and we can keep an eye on them. And their orbital changes are slight. I mean, we're talking like tens of thousands of years for some of these things to make much impression on their orbits. Anyway, so it takes a long time. We know where they're going to be tens of thousands of years from now. Let me put it that way.
How much time would we need? Well, I'll tell you what. You think about this. I got to take a break before we get to the news. Why don't you answer this when we come back? How much time would we need? What kind of heads up would we have to alter a course or change or blow up or whatever we're going to do to an asteroid? Think about that. We'll be right back. Matt Bubala with you on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. We're chatting with our buddy Jason Steffen from the Kepler Institute and University of Nevada at Las Vegas. What's your official title there, Jason? What's your title at UNLV?
I'm an assistant professor.
Are you going to be a full professor at some point instead of an assistant?
One of these days. One of these days. That's the plan.
That is the plan.
It's not an institute. It's just a regular department.
He's out in my stomping grounds out there. That's my old second home, Vegas.
Right. Lived
there 3.5 years.
What was the radio
years.
Station you worked at there, Raj?
Oh, gosh. KDWN.
You can't remember?
KFMS. KBMI.
All the K's. You worked at all the K's.
Well, there are a lot of K's out there. Yeah.
All right, so we got a break for the news in a second. But, Jason, before that, so tell me, how much lead time would we need if there was a meteor coming that was going to end life as we know it and everybody had to band together, all the powers to stop it? How much lead time would they need?
I have a great answer for you. And that answer is it depends. So it depends on how massive the object is. But I think you would probably want something like thousands of orbits of that object.
Meaning it would pass by Earth thousands of times before it was going to hit us?
Yeah. So, because what that does is it allows you, and we can do this, right? We can measure the position of something and see how long it's going to take. It's not going to hit us next week. It's
right.
This will come close to us 1,000 years from now or something like that.
Oh, my God. We would need 1,000 years leeway? You said that most of these things we find about after they passed.
Well, but that was then. Now, the new now is going to be that with this new telescope that's going up, we'll be able to see the things that are the ones that are most dangerous. They're the ones that come by more frequently and that are large enough to cause significant destruction.
If we only had a year, say we only had a year, with the nuclear weapons we have, we couldn't figure out how to shoot one into space?
Nuclear weapons, I don't think, are the thing. People can get creative, right? So you have to really, I think you would have to think very hard about how to deflect an asteroid. Whoops, sorry. How to deflect an asteroid in only a year. I'm not saying it couldn't be done, but it would take a lot of creativity. If you had 1,000 years, which is a reasonable, 1,000 years is a totally reasonable amount of time when you're talking about like predicting the position of something in the sky that you know its orbit. Then you can do something that's actually fairly boring, like paint it white or something like that, so that the radiation pressure from the sun actually deflects it in its orbit, and then it would miss the Earth.
You're right. That is a boring way to do it. Americans like to blow stuff up, I think, and we need to get rid of these nuclear weapons anyway so we don't all kill each other. So let's just go blow something. You know that people would totally, if it was put for a vote, Jason, and they said, well, we could just paint it white, and then the radiation of the sun will move it itself, or we could blow that thing up. We're all going to vote to blow it up, right?
Certainly, depending on the time of the year, right?
Yes, it'd be very patriotic.
July, exactly. Like, look out in the distance, you'll see this, you know. The thing is that these things, they're big, right? These are big objects. The ones that we're worried about are big. We're not really worried about the small stuff.
And how big are we talking? Like 2 mile in diameter or what? How big is big, like earth-ending big? Doesn't have to be that crazy huge, right?
I'd have to look that one up. You know, if you had something that was like a kilometer in diameter or something like that, it's probably...
Okay. So wouldn't one nuclear weapon exploding inside alter its trajectory enough to probably throw it off course?
No, not really.
Really?
You know, you have a kilometer of rock. That's like a mountain, right? You have this mountain-sized thing going through space.
Yeah.
Instead of a nuclear bomb, it'll be like, something, you know, it'd be like a fly hitting it.
Wait a minute. If you threw a nuclear bomb, if we had one of our missiles that's pointed at Russia right now and we shot it at Mount Everest, wouldn't that severely change the look of Mount Everest? I would think enough that if it was floating through the sky, it would move it a little bit, no?
Move it a little bit, but it would it move it enough? You know, the two nuclear bombs that have been dropped, and they were small by modern standards. You know, it's not like it changed. It devastated the city, but those are all man-made structures, right? When you have like a mountain, that's a different animal.
Wow, that's fascinating. Okay, we're going to take a quick break for the news. When we come back, I want to ask you about some of the stuff that's been in the news lately. I want to ask you more, of course, about Kepler, but also Anonymous said recently that they think NASA is going to reveal that they found life. I want to ask you about that. We've got a big solar eclipse coming across America in August. And also, you said something interesting earlier. You said if life was really common, when I asked you about if, you know, these habitable planets could talk to each other, you said if life was really common, I want to ask you about that. And is it still possible for us ever to say life is common out there? Or because we're having such trouble finding life out there, does that mean that life is not common at all? We'll find out after the news. 3:36 in the morning. Let's get upstairs and check the headlines with Roger. Matt Bubala with you. It is raining pretty good again on Michigan Avenue, Roger. As you said, we had a little break there for a little bit, but it's coming down again, and it's coming down heavy. 312-981-7200 is the number. We're chatting with our old friend Jason Steffen from the Kepler mission. He's an assistant professor out at UNLV. Jason, thanks for staying up later with us. We appreciate you still coming on the phone with us, even though you live so far away now, and it's... Well, I guess it's better for you now than it used to be here when you lived in Chicago, and it'd be 3:40 in the morning instead of 1:40 in the morning. But thank you.
Yeah, it's, this is, you know, about the time I go to bed anyway. So
is it really? Are you a bit of a night owl?
I do my best work after the kids go to bed.
That makes sense. I totally understand that. Hey, and I've asked you this, but it's been a long time since I've asked you. Since you've moved out to Nevada, and you're only less probably than an hour away from some really dark nighttime skies, have you ever gotten out into the desert and really looked up at all the stuff you're studying so often in your office?
Not recently. just because most of my we'll have a chance with like some scout camps and stuff like that. We went camping a couple months ago. And it had been a while since I'd seen that much of the sky, because Las Vegas is kind of an anomaly in terms of the amount of light that it produces.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay. All right. So a couple of things. First of all, earlier you said, when I was asking you about these planets and if they're close together, you said, well, if life was really common, do you think we'll ever say life is really common? Or do you think we've been searching for long enough now that we're going to say we might find life elsewhere, but it's not ever going to be considered common throughout the universe?
I guess common is a relative term. You have to define it in terms of something, like what fraction of stars have life around them. Mm-hmm. And if there's 300 billion stars in our galaxy and it happens that there's only one out of every billion stars that that has life around it, that's still 300 in a single galaxy, which isn't necessarily a small number.
But we know that there are billions.
I think we've only just barely begun to scratch the surface of this.
So
I mean, we're really at the rudimentary stage of doing this kind of stuff.
So and that was talking about just within our galaxy, and we know that there are billions of galaxies, right?
Yeah. So there are, if you add up all the stars in the visible universe, you get about 10 stars for every grain of sand on the Earth.
Think about that next time you're walking along the beach. Yikes. That's,
so there's,
that's
a lot of stars out there, and so life. I don't know. I'm personally not going to be surprised if we find that there's life out there.
It would be stunning if we didn't at some point, right? To think that there are billions of galaxies, that there are more stars than grains of sand. You said 10 stars for every grain of sand?
Yeah.
Which means that there are possibly, 100 planets for every grain of sand? Something like that, right?
Something like that.
Possibly.
Around there.
That's so to think that we would be the only thing ever in that vast openness would be stunning. It would be surprising.
I guess it depends on who you ask. I think that, this is my personal opinion. There's no science
sure.
behind this statement, but I just think, I'm not going to be surprised when, we find signatures of life on another planet.
Well, when I've talked to you in the past, I've tried to make you promise me that before I die, we will have this figured out. And you wouldn't promise me that. Have you changed your thinking at all? I'll give you 50 years. I'm going to try to hold out 50 more years. By the time I die, will you be able to say to me, we'll be in the old age home together, just rotting there. And you'll say, you know what, Matt, we did it. We found it. And I told you we would.
I will promise you that I will not say that. When we're in the old folks home together. So I don't know how long it will take to do it because, there's a lot of stuff that needs to get shaken out, in terms of scientifically about what a biosignature actually looks like. And there are people working on this. It's not that there aren't people looking at it. It's that, there's a lot of unknown unknowns that we need to find out and kind of sort through.
Oh, you went all Rumsfeld on me there for a second. There's a lot of unknown unknowns. Well, I believe that. I believe there's a lot. How do you think, if you had a guess, if you just were making a bet somewhere, how we're going to find out at first that there is some sort of life elsewhere? Will it just be we're going to figure out? I mean, we've sort of already figured out that there has been life on Mars and stuff like that, right? Haven't we found microbes and things like that where we know that life has not only always existed on Earth?
I don't know that there's been a smoking gun on Mars. There's definitely been, we definitely know that there's water on Mars and that there has been water, like flowing water on Mars.
Mm-hmm.
But we really, you know, how much of Mars have we actually explored in a reasonable detail? Like nothing, basically. So we've mapped the surface, but we've only mapped the surface, you know, in terms of like digging in the dirt and pulling stuff out and analyzing it.
We haven't done enough of that yet.
Yeah, we've had like one car driving around at 1 meter per second for the last decade. So
we don't know enough. Okay, Anonymous, yeah. The crazy hackers Anonymous that wear the Guy Fawkes masks. Somebody posted a video a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago now, saying that NASA is about to announce that they know of alien life or that they have some proof of alien life, whatever. NASA has not done that since this was posted. Do you think there's any chance that there is knowledge, that the government has knowledge, that there is some sort of hidden knowledge of alien life? I mean, would the government keep throwing all this money at you guys and things like that if they secretly had knowledge of alien life? Or do you think there's no way? Nothing happened in Roswell. There's none of that. People aren't actually going up and getting anal probed. There's no cows being abducted. Do you think all of that is hubbly?
I don't think that there's any evidence that anyone has that there's life or that aliens have come to this planet. The amount of money that it would take, I just don't see this as being even remotely close to reality.
It seems crazy that an advanced alien civilization would travel as far as we know that they would have to travel, which is insanely far, even if they're incredibly advanced. Still very impressive if they got here. It'd be very unlikely, right, that they would come all this way and then just, you know, pluck somebody off a farm in the middle of the night and prod them and then return them. That seems.
Yeah. For us not to notice ever. I mean,
with all the
these kinds of things, they're like not even wrong, right? It's so far out there that it does not, it's an indication that the proponents of this don't understand the sizes of numbers that are involved in the universe, the distances that are involved.
And would it be possible if ships were coming from other planets, if, say, this was happening, middle of the night, whatever, people being abducted, with everything we have in the sky. Now, I know that, like you just said that, hey, sometimes meteors pass by and we don't see them till after they're gone. If it was possible for flying saucers, things like this, to get here, do this, and for whatever crazy reason, they thought, yeah, we made it all this way, let's just check out somebody on a road somewhere, put them back and freak them out a little bit. Would they be able to do that without some satellite, something picking up the fact that there were UFOs in the sky?
Kind of unlikely. I guess it depends on what amazing propulsion systems very advanced civilizations have, but they still have the same laws of physics that we do. It's not like when you get advanced civilization status that you can be like, oh, let's write some new laws of physics and change how the universe works in my little compartment. I mean, the amount of toilet paper that they would have to have on their ship just to get here is so big that.
Well, is there a possibility that they figured out wormholes or other things like that, and they don't have to just, you know, take 100,000 light years to travel here, that they could actually figure out some way that, with the way the universe bends and this and that, they were able to transport themselves here more quickly? Or do you think that's, even with their incredibly advanced knowledge, that ain't happening?
It makes great science fiction, good opportunities for people to do, like, scientific art, but that's not a thing.
Okay, well, let's talk about this, because I would have never thought this was a thing, but we were just reading this story last week that, so they're looking into teleportation, right? There's research into teleportation. Supposedly China has created photons, and they have some satellite in the sky, and they sent a photon to the satellite in the sky and kept one here on Earth, and they're saying that they have, in very small little increments, been able to achieve teleportation. Am I completely misunderstanding what that even means?
So it's teleportation. So this is a real thing, but teleportation in a very technical and strict sense. And that is that they have been able to send quantum information over some great distance that basically faster than you would be able to communicate between those two objects. That's basically what it says. So it's not like they took a baseball or an apple and teleported it somewhere. What they did is you take a single quantum particle, a photon, and you split it into two photons that are entangled, meaning that you split into two photons in such a way that the quantum numbers, things like the spin, the polarization, the polarization of the photons, the angular momentum of the photons, some of these different pieces of quantum information gets shared between the daughter particles. You take an incoming photon, you break it into two photons that are lower energy, but they share quantum particle or quantum information. Then you separate the two daughter particles some great distance, and then you measure the properties of one of the particles, and that tells you what the properties of the other particle are. But you can't actually know the properties until you measure them. One thing with quantum particles is that you can't actually know what property something has until you make the measurement. And so in that regard, you can instantly know the quantum properties of the distant particle based upon what you learn about the one that you have in your laboratory.
And if you mess with the one in the, from what I understand, tell me if I'm completely wrong on this, once you have those separated like that, if you mess with the one in the laboratory, it's going to mess in the same way with the one that is a distance away?
Yeah, basically, yeah. This is something, there's a colleague that I have in my department who actually works on quantum computing and quantum encryption and entangled states and stuff like that. But it being summertime, we've not crossed paths since this result has come out. And so it is something that I intend to corner him in a few weeks once school kind of gets back into session.
And find out what in the world does that mean. Okay. Well, then that will
Just so I understand, like, what really are they talking about? I mean, I could read the paper, but that sounds like work. I could just go, you know, knock on his door and have him do all the work.
It's good to know that even rocket scientists like you or guys are like, yeah, I'm not going to read that paper. Joe can tell me what that means. I'll let him do it.
I mean, I certainly read some of the articles, and I got the idea, okay, the quantum teleportation, it's about entangled states. But to gain the kind of insight that I would like to have when I discuss it with people would require more than just reading a single paper.
Yeah. And so the crazy thing, though, is because we think of Star Trek and teleporting and stuff, this really is nowhere near anything like that. They're talking about what this could really help with is better Wi-Fi, right? That's when what I read, they're like, oh, this might really help our Wi-Fi someday. I don't understand that, but that's what I read.
Yeah, okay, so that might take a little time for me to figure that one out too. What it can do in terms of Wi-Fi, for example, it can make it so that you don't need to do handshaking as much. Like, yeah, did you get the packet? Yes, I got the packet. Thank you. Send the next one. Okay, I got this packet too. That when you have quantum information, the information is absolutely preserved. Like, you measure one particle and that tells you exactly what the other particle is doing. And so if you can get that to where your measurements are accurate enough, then you basically have no data loss in these kinds of systems.
And that would somehow make these things insanely fast.
It'd make it fast. This is straying well outside of my expertise.
Sure.
The kinds of things you can do with this type of capability, I think, are kind of unknown. I mean, this is a realm. My suspicion is that it has the potential to be as revolutionary as the transistor was. And the transistor is what took us from, took us into the digital age, basically. Yeah.
And enabled everything that you're doing today, really, right?
Yeah, I mean, I have my laptop open because I looked up the near Earth asteroid thing. There's an ongoing survey now called Pan-STARRS that looks exactly at the asteroid threat, commissioned by Congress, where they said, you know, look for these things and we want this kind of completeness and stuff like that. So if your listeners want to look it up and see kind of what's been done, and it actually has one of these, how do you steer an asteroid away from the Earth if it's coming towards us? But the asteroid threat, Pan-STARRS is the name of the survey.
Pan-STARRS. Hey, real quick, I got to let you...
And this computer would not be able to work if it weren't for the transistor.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so I got to let you go in a second because we got to do news. But there's going to be this crazy eclipse that we're, you know, isn't going to be over America again for like 100 years. Are you going to get out and see any of that?
Well, I just found out that my UNLV classes actually start a week later than I thought they were. I thought that my first day of school for teaching was going to be the day of the eclipse. But it's actually a week after that. And so there's a possibility that I will be able to visit my sister's home, which is in Idaho, right underneath the complete shadow. If not, then, you know, there's going to be plenty of people live streaming. And in fact, UNLV is flying a balloon. There's a bunch of universities that are making balloon payloads to watch the thing go overhead.
No, that's
kind of do a live stream all along the trajectory. I may be able to go. I haven't passed it with my better half yet. I haven't talked with her about it. But I do have, I'm sure I could bother my sister for a couch for an evening.
Yeah, I think that sounds really cool. So it's like August 21st, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's going to one of the really, I thought I read one of the best places is going to be down just south of Peoria here in Illinois, I think, is going to be one of the really good places to watch, or something like that. Not too far.
Yeah, it goes right
within
across.
Driving distance.
I mean, this is like heartland USA. I mean, it goes from the Pacific Northwest to the Mid-Atlantic states, right through the middle of farm country. I mean, Wyoming is going to get a huge swath, and I'm not sure about Iowa. I'd have to look up the map, but
it's so it better not be a cloudy day.
It does go right through the Midwest. Yeah. It goes through places where Portillo's is a thing.
Are you missing some Portillo's, Jason? Is that one of the big regrets?
Absolutely, I'm missing Portillo's. I miss it almost every day. There is one that's in Riverside that's only 3 hours away, but I've not had the chance to go there.
Only 3 hours away.
We do have Culver's here, though.
Oh,
we do have Culver's in Utah. There are three of them.
Well, and you have In-N-Out Burger in Vegas, and you don't have that here in Chicago, and people often kind of compare and contrast Culver's and In-N-Out. What's your theory on In-N-Out?
I would rather go to Culver's.
Okay. That's fair enough. Fair enough. It's not
because
fair. Because
one scoop turtle at Culver's is...
Oh, you're talking more about the ice cream than the burgers. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Jason Steffen from the Kepler Mission and UNLV. So awesome of you to jump on the phone with us. We'll talk again, maybe right after the solar eclipse. I'll get you a review of that. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right, Jason. Thanks so much for staying up, buddy. Have a great morning.
Bye. Right,
talk to you soon. Jason Steffen from UNLV and the Kepler Mission. News is going to be a little late because I got to take a quick break, Roger. Is that okay? Here's your news update. Raining on Michigan Avenue again.
Still?
God, man.
Yet?
NOAA is coming, people.
I was going to ask. How many days is this now? 3 out of the 40?
We got a lot. But can you imagine how much? That gives you a good idea of how much water that actually was.
That's right.
News is next, 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. Hope you enjoyed our little journey away from the world that we live in into the world of, I don't know, possibilities, life in other places. Somebody texted, 815 said, is it possible that aliens could have visited here thousands of years ago? However, with the relative of time in their reality, it was not that long ago. Like maybe they've only been back for a month there.
Yeah.
Time, however, because of thousands of years ago.
The distance,
okay. Maybe we're only here on Earth because an alien civilization visited here. Who knows?
Anything's possible.
It is.
Especially since we don't know.
I'm still hoping we find out before we kick it.
That would be cool.
It would be cool to know, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
That would be really cool to know. I don't even need contact. I just want to know that we know. We know that there's something else out there. I don't want microbes. I want
like they left something behind.
No, I just want us to figure out that somewhere else out there, not only are there habitable planets everywhere, but we figured out we see light emanating or we hear radio waves or there's something.
I just saw something yesterday that they received radio waves from a galaxy. Where did I just saw that. I think it was last night.
But
I
that
saw
happens
it.
From time to time, and then it turns out to be nothing. It was radiation, or it was a solar flare.
Yeah.
Or rah, rah, rah. If you tell me, and they picked up, B-96, then I'll be impressed.
Yeah, baby.
Somebody doing a boogie check 10 light years away. Now we got something.
John Spaceman Landecker.
Spaceman is my middle name.
There you go.
All right, so back here in reality.
Yeah. On Terra Firma.
Terra something. So a guy named Anthony Scaramucci is now the, what is his communications director?
Director of communications.
Director of communications. His nickname is The Mooch. He went to 1986 graduate of Tufts, attended Harvard Law, used to support President Obama, supported Hillary, was called Trump anti-American before jumping onto the Trump train, according to a story from Slate. I didn't realize all this today until I just read this. So this is the guy that got the people fired from CNN.
Oh.
The story of the three reporters that just had to resign because they had a story all screwed up.
Right.
About when CNN reported erroneously that Scaramucci had met with a Russian investment bank that had government ties. He threatened to sue them for $100 million. The three senior journalists resigned and CNN retracted. So I didn't realize that. So he's got that going for him. So he's going to have some interesting moments with CNN, I'm sure.
Do you know how much he's worth?
Is he worth a bill?
One and a half bill. Yeah.
So he doesn't need this gig, but he's taking it. And he's going to love it.
You know who you originally supported for president?
Mitt Romney.
No, after that, in the last election.
No, I don't know.
Scott Walker and Jeb Bush.
But he came around. Yep. Jess, do we still have the 27 seconds of Anthony Scaramucci from earlier today from his little meeting, from his praising of his new boss, President Trump? Let me know when you have that. You ready to go? Yeah, the one we played earlier. Yeah, let's go ahead and play that right now. Let's refresh.
Here's what I tell you about the president. He's the most competitive person I've ever met. Okay, I've seen this guy throw a dead spiral through a tire. I've seen him at Madison Square Garden with a top coat on. He's standing in the key and he's hitting foul shots.
Standing
and swishing
in the key,
them.
Just swish
he
them.
Sinks 3-foot putts. I don't see this guy as a guy that's ever under siege. This is a very, very competitive person. Obviously, there's a lot of incoming that comes into the White House, but the president's a winner. Okay, and what we're going to do is we're going to do a lot of winning.
Do a lot of winning. That's what we're going to do. And I think that, you know, later in the day, he comes in, glad hands for the president. Said, what did you think? I loved it. I loved everything. What the hell you mean 3-foot putts? I nail those in my sleep. That's nothing. 10-foot putts. It should have been 10-foot putts.
Yeah.
Why are you saying 3-foot putts?
Get the story straight.
God's sakes, man. Of course I had 3-foot putts. Anybody hits 3-foot putts. 10-foot putts. I bet there's a correction at some point in the next week.
Well, I'm sure probably
I bet
has.
He gets. He does that line again for somebody. Yeah. But the putts grow longer. That's my guess. I still can't see the tight spiral. I just don't see.
Yeah, through a tire.
I want somebody to say.
Well, if you're standing in front of it, right at like a foot away.
I want the follow-up question. That's really cool. Where were you with him that he was throwing the tight spirals?
Yeah.
I want to hear what he says to that. We were at a training camp thing. You know, does he have a good answer? Did he really see that?
Were there witnesses?
Where was he throwing tight spirals? That was the thing we were doing. He's in the backyard. I got a tire hanging from a tree.
Yeah, it was his kids.
We throw the tight spiral.
It was Junior's tire.
This story from the New York Times. The long-anticipated resignation rattled an administration already reeling from the most trying two-week stretch of Mr. Trump's presidency. Has this been the most trying two-week stretch? Because that's hard to measure, though, sometimes.
Seems like a long 2 weeks.
Trying 2 weeks. Yeah. The president's health care effort foundered in the Senate last week. Should that have been floundered?
Or could have been.
Foundered works there in the Senate last week. And next week promises no respite with his son, Donald Trump Jr. and son-in-law Jared Kushner due to testify before Congress on questions about, are they testifying next week?
Well, now, the latest is that they are going to have private conversations with the heads of the committee and that they will turn over documents. But they will not sit publicly and testify.
Come on.
Yeah.
That was fun the day Comey did that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, whether you're happy about it or not, that was OJ verdict, like, excitement. You know, it was everybody kind of like, ooh, I'm going to turn that on today.
Yeah.
See what happens. Hey, by the way, OJ got paroled.
Isn't that something?
That is something.
Welcome back to the real world.
And
there,
that was
OJ.
Another story. God, do I have that story? It's just everything.
It
was a busy week. OJ gets paroled, and I find out that. So then, of course, there's a story about what are OJ's connections to Donald Trump.
Mm.
And there's a great photo of them, and people were posting great things like, hey, the 90s are back. You know, Trump and OJ.
OJ, yeah.
And there was a great photo of those two together. And, so somebody did a whole story about the Trump Organization and all the websites they buy up.
Oh.
To keep control of. And it was something like they own the website TrumpandOJ.com.
Oh, God.
They do. The Trump Organization owns TrumpandOJ.com.
Wow.
And it sounds like they just buy up whatever they can to prevent somebody else from using it.
Amazing.
I want to say, God, I wish I had that story with me. I want to say that it was like over 3,000 different websites that they don't use that just redirect to Trump, but that they own, like TrumpSucks.com.
You know, you got the librarian.
TrumpandOJ.com.
You haven't used your librarian.
He'll type that right in.
Trump websites. Trump's vast internet empire. Oh, my God. This is from February. Money.CNN.com. Trump has 3,643 websites that range from TrumpEmpire.com to TrumpFraud.org.
Yes, they own TrumpPonziScheme.com.
Wow.
And so there's two things there. It's like, hey, this will prevent anybody else. And if we ever just willingly acknowledge that's what we're doing, we already own the URL.
Amazing.
So, I mean, it's pretty smart. You buy those up, but that's expensive. That's, you know, $9-$10 minimum a year. You own 3,000 of those. That's a bit of a tab to keep going.
Yeah. Trump GoDaddy must love them. TrumpPyramidScheme.com.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
PonziScheme.com.
Just buy them all up. TrumpAnything.com. And so they just buy them up and protect themselves. And TrumpAndOJ.com is one that they own. Because there's one photo of Trump with OJ, and they figure we better buy that so people don't take advantage of that.
He also, God, I'm quoting, Trump, known for being a litigious celebrity, also bought I'm Being Sued by the Donald.com in 2009. Oh, my gosh.
He does do interesting things.
Yeah.
All right. Sean Spicer said goodbye. We will remember him next. 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you. 720 WGN. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us. We've got just about 2 minutes before news. So, Jess, let's go ahead and fade out of that music. Let's do our two-minute tribute to all the great memories that Sean Spicer has brought to us. And it's loading. Oh, Sean.
We're talking Sean Spicer's recapping his career?
No, he's not. We just are. It was some highlights CBS put together.
I gotcha.
It doesn't want to load. So we'll do that right after the news.
Oh,
so why don't we do that instead? And what's great is Jess and I were just watching this during the commercial break, and I had completely forgotten about Covfefe.
Oh, that's right.
And that was just like 3 weeks ago, wasn't it? I mean, it was probably
a couple months ago.
But it wasn't. He wasn't even president a year ago.
Wow.
I mean, just think about
it just happened.
The highlights of the just kind of the, you know. You don't have to be anti-Donald Trump or pro-Donald Trump to appreciate that there's just been a lot of stuff going on during, you know, presidencies are generally kind of boring. Maybe there's the Clintons and they're scandalous, or there's the Obamas and they're controversial because of the legislation or whatever. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of reality TV craziness going on with this administration that it, at the very least makes it entertaining. You have to admit that. Like him, not like him, whatever your politics are. There's something new and interesting. There's some water cooler conversation just about every day.
Yeah.
Whether it's Russia, whether it's the mooch, whether it's Sean Spicer, whether it's the son-in-law or just whatever. Or the tweets, the endless string of tweets. There's just a lot of this is not your typical presidency. There's that. You got to admit that.
Yeah.
Love it or hate it, there's what it is.
It is entertaining.
You got to say that. Play ball. Celebrate the Cubs with team memorabilia, exclusive books, and so much more. Visit ChicagoTribuneStore.com today. Let's check the news. 4:30 in the morning. Here's the headlines with Roger.
I see a little silhouette of a man.
Scaramouche, Scaramouche, will you do the fandango?
Thunderbolts and lightning, very, very frightening.
Texter said, hey, Matt, I'm waiting for some reporter to pop up and say, Scaramouche, Scaramouche, can you do the fandango? They think that Queen maybe predicted him.
Oh, really?
Scaramouche, Scaramouche.
Look at that.
I don't know if that's what they say in that song or not.
Well, I wonder if he got his name from the song.
Maybe the family became Scaramucci based on the song Bohemian Rhapsody. Maybe, Raj.
Hey,
maybe.
Dude, we really like the song. Let's change your name.
Maybe, 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 maybe. 630 writes, Raj, it's not an 800-mile tunnel. They're producing neutrinos at Fermi and passing them through the Earth to Stanford.
Yeah,
neutrinos pass through the Earth without any interaction. No tunnel needed.
They are providing. I will read it again.
Please do, Thank Mr. You. Librarian.
U.S. Department of Energy. The big guys are involved. pursues discovery science that inspires and transforms our nation, research that can sometimes be pursued only in unique environments. Sanford Underground Research Facility, owned and operated by the South Dakota Science and Technology Authority, or SDSTA, provides one such unique facility. Its laboratories are located 4,850 feet underground.
Okay, the laboratory is.
Right.
But are they actually building a tunnel from here to there, or are they just shooting them through the earth, as this person is saying?
It's the Deep Underground Neutrino Experiment.
Okay.
Which the letters spell out Dune.
Okay.
Okay. Let's see.
But it sounds like maybe there's no tunnel needed. Just at Fermilab, they got something 4,000 feet down, and same thing at Sanford.
Fermilab, located in Batavia, will send a beam of particles called neutrinos, 800 miles through Earth.
Aha.
To Sanford Lab. Their enormous particle detectors, located nearly a mile underground, will receive the neutrinos and send the data to scientists.
So they didn't have to build the tunnel.
No, we don't have to. But
saved us a lot of money.
It would be nice.
It would be kind of cool.
I would love another
to go 4,000 feet down and say, hey, you know what? If you turn right here, you get to Sanford in like 2 hours less than it would take normally.
Can you see Bugs Bunny
just riding on a neutrino?
I thought I was in Poughkeepsie.
Get a little Hyperloop action all the way to Sanford. So, thank you, 630, for correcting us. No tunnel necessary.
Darn.
Just fire those neutrinos along.
That would have been nice. I like that they call it Dune. That was another book series that I read every single book of.
Is the David Lynch film Dune based on those books?
Yes. Well, it's based on the first one.
On the book. Yeah. Did you ever see Dune, the movie?
Oh, yeah. I loved it. I got panned horrifically by people.
Well,
but I loved it because I loved the series, the books.
But you still have not watched any Twin Peaks.
I've watched, not the new ones.
The new ones.
Yes, I know.
The new ones are something else.
I know.
Something else.
I got to find time and get in the mood for them.
Okay. Speaking of getting in the mood, nothing gets people in the mood like a little Sean Spicer retrospective. Jess has it all queued up and ready to go. Let's give our love to what was, how many, they had their first 100 days about a month ago. So what, 135, 140 days, Sean lasted?
180 now.
180? It's been that long?
I think I saw 180 listed somewhere.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good for them. Okay, let's remember the press secretary that was, Mr. Sean Spicer.
Can you say affirmatively that whenever the president says something, we can trust it to be real?
If he's not joking, of course. Inaugural proceedings were intentionally framed in a way, in one particular tweet, to minimize the enormous support that had gathered on the National Mall.
I was going to say, your pants upside down.
John Roberts always helping with the fashion tips.
It's still upside down.
Is this a stress call, Sean?
But April, hold on. You, it seems like you're hell-bent on trying to make sure that whatever image you want to tell about this White House stays. Because at the end of the day, let me answer. But you know what? You're asking me a question, and I'm going to answer it, which is the president. I'm sorry. Please stop shaking your head again. But at some point, the reality is that this president continues to reach out to individuals who've supported him, who didn't support him, Republicans, Democrats, to try to bring the country together and move forward on an agenda that's going to help every American. That's it. You look... We didn't use chemical weapons in World War II. You know, you had someone as despicable as Hitler who didn't even sink to using chemical weapons. And he brought him into to the Holocaust Center. I understand that. But I'm saying in the way that Assad used them, where he went into towns, dropped them down to innocent into the middle of towns, it was brought to it. So the use of it, and I appreciate the clarification there. That was not the intent. Can I just... I think I got this, but thank you. Maybe. All right, thanks, man. I'll see you in a minute.
That was Rob Gronkowski jumping in on
the president. The president posted somewhat of an incoherent tweet last night, and that it then stayed up for hours.
No.
Why did it stay up so long? Is no one watching this?
No, I think the president and a small group of people know exactly what he meant. Blake.
That ends it. So that wasn't even on video. That's towards the end of everything when they wouldn't do video mostly anymore. That was about the Kofafe tweet. They said there was an incoherent tweet. You know, small group of people know what that means. That is the biggest, fattest lie I think he's told. I will never buy that. Now, of course, he's going to say that because he's not going to say what my guess is. President Trump likes to tweet kind of in the middle of the night. I don't know if he wakes up early, if he goes to bed late, if like the, most of us, he has to tinkle at some point in the middle of the night. That's my guess. You get up to tinkle. You think, oh, I'll check the phone. You look at it. There's something that annoys you. You know, like, gosh darn it. And then he tweets something out. And my guess is that he just, as I do when I'm reading to the kids at night, or when I used to read to the kids, they're getting old. But when I used to read to the kids at night at like, you know, 8:30 at night after a long day and you're tired and I'm laying in the bed, which is a bad start. And I'd be reading a sort of.
You start dozing off.
I literally would like sound like a record, you know, going slow on the last sentence. And then I'd pass out and the kids would die laughing and love it. And then they'd play. And that seems to me like what happened. President Trump is tweeting something out, but he's kind of getting tired. And he's sort of, and then somehow hit send. There is no way that there's a small group of people that know exactly what he meant. Well, of course he's going to say that because he's not going to say, yeah, he was really wiped out and he just kind of passed out as he sent it. Trump would have killed him, right?
Yeah.
So he just kind of played it off as, no, believe me, the people that know, know.
Yeah, right. You can't accept that?
The people who
need to know, know.
That's the greatest story.
And if you don't need to know, then we can't tell you.
There's a small group of people. They know what the COFFA means.
Yeah.
That's just great. That's just great. I love that. I've actually felt bad for him. I did not often, because he just got off on such a tough start. You heard the little clip in there from the inauguration day.
Mm-hmm.
And he came out guns blazing like, you know, say hello to my little friend. And he just sprayed bullets all over the press room when he attacked them on the size of the crowd and the biggest crowd ever. And they saw it and it was the most watched. I mean, he was just sweating and punching the podium and just day one. That was day one. He just lost it on everybody. And, you know, that was what he was told to do. So I didn't feel bad for him about that. But when he was trying to talk about the Assad regime and say, listen, you know, nobody has ever been so bad with even Hitler wasn't this bad. And as soon as you mention Hitler, you don't say the N-word. You don't mention Hitler. Those are two things in the world that you just there's never like, no, this makes sense. I'm going to do this here that you wouldn't step back and go, yeah, maybe not. Maybe that wouldn't work. And ever trying to compare anybody to, they're not, you know, even Hitler wasn't this bad. That's just never a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know what somebody would have to do where everybody would be universally in agreement. Go, yeah, that, true. Yeah, Hitler was not that bad. I don't know what that would be, but it would be just incredibly, incredibly, incredibly awful. So it doesn't make sense to ever even try to do it. But he, for some reason, went down that road and was like, dude, even Hitler wasn't this bad. And everybody was like, Hitler didn't use chemical weapons on his own people. And they're like, and then they're pointing that out to him and he's sweating. He's like, yeah, all right. You know, that's not what I meant. Cause I know, cause yeah, you're right. Of course, because they, you know, at the Holocaust centers. And then you're like, oh God, I just said Holocaust centers.
Yeah.
And I'm actually feeling for him because I know he's just up there, you know, like, oh my God, I'm just digging this hole deeper and deeper and deeper and making it worse. And so I actually felt for him there, like, I know he's trying to fix this, and now I'm just making it worse. And somebody please just stop me from talking here before it, you know, spirals out of control.
See, he needed to take a course in media relations. And one of the first things that we teach people like him is that you don't jump on the question. You pause. You wait. You gather your wits. Or to cover up the pause, you use a statement. I'm glad you asked me that. Or interesting that you brought that up, or something like that. Until you get you can wrap your brain around what they're asking, and you definitely don't get into a give and take with a reporter.
Well, I think that he was being the press secretary he felt his boss wanted, whether. Because I think he's a smart guy. Clearly, he's made it a long way, and he was at the top of the food chain of a Republican Party. So he had the credentials, right? But he had a boss that was not like any other boss we've seen in politics before. And he tried to be the press secretary that he knew his boss wanted. And his boss does not want him sitting and being thoughtful and you know, erudite or anything like that. He wants an attack dog. He wants somebody who is going to shape the message, control the message, not just answer the questions, but re-steer the conversation. And let's face it, the one thing this administration has done pretty well is divert attention to other things. If we don't want you talking about Russia all the time, you know, now what did people spend the day doing? Talking about the mooch.
Yeah.
And his way he did everything and this and that and this and that. I mean, he kind of owned the day, right? And that helps the administration keep it away from things that are annoying them or being talked about or, you know, anything else that's, you know, the healthcare bill that they're really having trouble doing what they want with. Mm-hmm. So they do a good job of diverting our attention at the very least. All right, we'll catch up on spots. The morning show with Max and O's coming up in a little bit here on 720 WGN. Matt Bubala with you, 720 WGN. A couple minutes left in the show. We'll say hello to Orion Samuelson before he starts the morning show here in just a few minutes. Anthony Scaramucci, during his introductory press conference today, said, "I think there's been at times a disconnect between the way we see the president and how much we love the president and the way some of you perhaps see the president." He also said, "I certainly see the American people probably see the president the way I do. But we want to get that message out there." Mr. Trump released a statement saying, "Anthony is a person I have great respect for. We have accomplished so much and we're being given credit for so little. The good news is the people get it, even if the media doesn't." And Trump also called Sean Spicer, quote, "a wonderful person who took tremendous abuse from the fake news media, but his future is bright." you know, so in an interview with Fox News, Sean Spicer, I wondered how he would sound. And I guess, as Roger said, he's still under technically still employed until August. Mm-hmm. But he made a comment I had heard about the news media and saying that he feels that too many journalists are out there trying to become YouTube stars and don't have the journalistic integrity that they should.
Yeah,
and I thought that was interesting because they filled the White House briefings with a lot of bloggers, very pro-Trump or pro-Republican Party bloggers that they were calling on and kind of ignoring the ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, MSNBC people. And just, you know, for him to say that when they're not, you know, calling on or certainly railing against the established media, the people that already are. You know, that aren't just trying to become YouTube stars. I don't think anybody on NBC is trying to become a YouTube star. They're already on NBC. They don't need to become a YouTube star. They need to, you know, be a star for NBC.
Here's what he said.
Go ahead.
"They're not there for the facts or the pursuit of the truth. Rather, they are trying to figure out, how do I get on TV? How do I become a YouTube star? And that's disappointing. But there are some good reporters that still spend time getting to know, to learn the facts, to get the story out."
Yeah. So there's Sean Spicer sticking to his guns, even on day one out of the job. We'll see if there's a book deal in his future and if he will stick and be a loyalist to President Trump, or if at some point he becomes an analyst and starts speaking out or speaking against some of the things that maybe he put up with while he's boss. But so far, everybody's saying nice things about each other. One more quick break. We'll say hello to O, find out what's coming up on the morning show next on 720 WGN.